Welcome to All Sides with Ann Fisher. 25 years ago on July 26th, President George H.W. Bush signed into law the Americans with Disabilities Act. Coming up, we'll talk in detail about how the landmark legislation has enabled people with all manner of disabilities to navigate public places and secure better employment. And we'll hear about the legal struggles. Right now, Americans across the country are celebrating the anniversary of the ADA, including in Columbus. Joining us by phone from the Columbus Commons is Derek Mortland of the Center for Disability Empowerment. Welcome to the show, Derek.
Oh, thank you, Ann. Good to be here.
Derek, we were talking earlier, and I just want to ask you again, you don't remember where you were when the ADA was signed into law because it didn't affect you then.
No, I don't. I was, when it was signed into law, I was only 21 years old, and I didn't have a disability at that time. So it really wasn't on my radar screen.
When did it get on your radar screen?
I had a motorcycle accident in 1997 that left me paralyzed from the waist down, and obviously my life completely changed at that point, and having to use a wheelchair now, I was glad that somebody had the forethought to pass legislation like the ADA.
I think it's kind of interesting how you got into the business of it as well. You had a background in building and construction.
Correct. Yeah, I was... kind of an accident. I was living up around Chicago, and I was building custom log homes in northern Illinois and Wisconsin, and I had previous experience in the commercial construction industry as well. So a friend of mine, once I got had my accident, got paralyzed. He's like, Derek, you know all this stuff about building and construction? He's like, you should learn all this regulations with the new ADA, and because you're in a wheelchair, people will probably believe whatever you tell them. So I was like, all right, so here I am on your show, you know, 18 years later.
And what you say is gospel, so beware of that. You're listening to All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News. Coming up on Sunday is the literal 25th anniversary of the Americans with Disabilities Act. I remember where I was when it was signed. Do you? Give us a call if you have a question or comment this hour about the Americans with Disabilities Act. We're going to be talking about the legal aspects of it, the litigation that's occurred over the past 25 years to hone the law as it stands. 614-292-8513 or email us at allsides@wosu.org. With me right now is Derek Mortland. He's the Community Outreach Coordinator for the Center for Disability Empowerment. He's downtown at the Columbus Commons where there is our events taking place today. For more information, you can go to WOSU.org and check out the link on our website about what's going on for the rest of the day. You recently completed surveys of the University of Toledo main campus and the Medical College campus there and completed a training series for all employees at the Columbus Metro Airport. And I'm wondering if you could give us a sense about how people respond to the ideas and the provisions of the Americans with Disabilities Act today.
That depends on who you're talking to. Some people are really proactive, like the University of Toledo and, you know, Columbus Regional Airport Authority. They've actually contacted us to do trainings and assessments to make sure that they're up to speed with their facilities and, you know, accommodating people with disabilities and their services and programs. You know, there's still some businesses out there that are not fully accessible. And they see things every day going around in a wheelchair. So there's still work to do, but there's lots of people making the right moves and being proactive about becoming compliant.
What seems to be, from where you sit, what seems to be the greatest struggles?
When you have legislation, whenever you pass a law, the problem with that is you can't legislate people's attitudes. So that's still the biggest barrier, is just the natural prejudices people have. Yeah, I think we all have prejudices in some respect, mm-hmm. Whether we admit it or not. But, you know, when you're looking at people with disabilities, if there's not access into a building, it leads to discrimination. Whether you think you're discriminating or being prejudiced against somebody or not.
In the building trades, is there, what is your sense? That's where you came from. You have insights into that. What's your sense about how they have responded to the laws?
Some, like I said, it's sort of across the board. Some people are really proactive and take it seriously and do a really good job with it. Other people think it's something that, they can get by. And part of that is because there's really no enforcement of the ADA other than through legal action. So there's no ADA police or any government agency that's inspecting buildings for compliance. It's all complaint-driven.
Well, so then, Derek Mortland, what's the demand for your time to consult and educate people about what needs to be done?
Oh, what's the demand? We've been getting quite a few calls. So it's important to remember, too, before the Americans with Disabilities Act, there was a piece of legislation already on the books that applied to programs receiving federal funding, Section 504 of the Rehabilitation Act.
Mm-hmm.
And so if you were a program, state or local government, and you were receiving federal funding, you already had a responsibility to be compliant under the Rehab Act, and that was passed in 1973. There really weren't any implementing regulations for it until 1977, so that's when the Rehabilitation Act actually got some teeth to it. So, you know, that existed, you know, close to 20 years prior to the ADA.
You know, obviously 25 years ago, the ADA was enacted, but everything didn't change overnight. It took time, and a lot of the provisions would not be implemented until there were renovations done to buildings and that sort of thing. What's the biggest change you've seen over time, Derek?
Biggest change, just getting, you know, better access to places, getting more curb cuts around the city, you know, more elevators in the buildings. Probably not so much with buildings, but with disabilities other than a mobility disability, technology has really changed the playing field.
Mm-hmm.
Because there's requirements in the guidelines for buildings to have TTY if you have a bank or four more public phones in the building.
And that is what?
Well, that's sort of changed because everybody has cell phones now, and people I know who are deaf use the cell phones for texting now, and they don't use TTYs as much as what they once did. So technology sort of changed the playing field as part of the ADA. And, that goes into the web accessibility as well. There's Section 508 that just got passed for the Rehabilitation Act that requires electronic information to be accessible as well.
But not everybody agrees that that is a necessity in life, do they?
No, but actually, when I do trainings, I tell people that we wouldn't actually have the Internet today if it wasn't for disabilities.
How
so? Because the first component of that is the typewriter was actually invented in the early 1800s for somebody who was blind. The typewriter obviously led to the computer keyboard. And then there was a gentleman out in California in the late 70s, early 80s, when we had answering machine technology. Everybody was getting answering machines in their homes. And he had a wife who was deaf, and he could not leave her a message on the answering machine because obviously she couldn't hear it. So he invented this system so he could leave her like a text message. And then that eventually got marketed to companies like IBM, and it turned into the intranet. And then from that, it developed into the Internet.
So tell us, Derek Mortland, what's happening at the Columbus Commons in downtown Columbus. If people drop by, what are they going to see? What can they do?
Oh, we've got about 50 vendors out here on the lawn, various disability programs, services. We have transportation companies. CODA's down here with their accessible mainstream services. We're going to have lunch down here. They've got food court lunch, so it's going to be lots of food trucks down here, so you can grab lunch, come down, see the vendors, get some information on the ADA. And we also have a large, super-sized Justin Dart puppet in his wheelchair. Justin Dart was sort of the grandfather of the ADA. Did a lot of work to work with Congress to get them to pass the law. So you can come down and get your picture taken with the Justin Dart puppet.
Okay. Well, I know everybody's down there. We had a hard time getting anyone into the studio today. So we appreciate your time, Derek Mortland, for joining us today.
Yeah, thank you, Ann.
That's Derek Mortland. He's the Community Outreach Coordinator for the Center for Disability Empowerment. We're talking about the 25th anniversary of the Americans with Disabilities Act. If it's affected your life, give us a call and tell us how. 614-292-8513. You can also email us at allsides@wosu.org. You can check out our Facebook page and post a question or comment. Tell us how the ADA has affected your life there. If you can write in 140 characters or less, you can tweet it to us at WOSU All Sides. We'll be right back. This is All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News. Welcome back to All Sides. I'm your host, Ann Fisher. Sunday marks the 25 years since President George H.W. Bush officially signed the Americans with Disabilities Act into law. The ADA extended the rights of millions by banning discrimination in public places and in workplaces. The law was intended to give people access, literally and figuratively, to jobs and places. And to a large degree, it has succeeded, but it didn't happen without a lot of litigation that continues today. Joining us now in the studio is Columbus-based disability and civil rights lawyer Fred Gittes. Welcome to the show, Fred.
Hi. Thanks for having me.
And disability rights senior attorney Barbara Korner. Welcome to the show, Barbara.
I'm glad to be here.
When he signed the Americans with Disabilities Act into law, President Bush acknowledged that the act may be too vague or too costly or may lead to endless litigation. He said that it was crafted for flexibility. Barbara Korner, what's your assessment of how flexible the ADA has been over the last 25 years?
The ADA has been extremely flexible because it has enabled people like myself. I'm totally blind and I work as an attorney and I'm a supervising attorney now. To get the accommodations that I needed. It's provided, you know, the freedom for me to be able to get around the city. It's also enabled people with invisible disabilities, like learning disabilities or mental health issues or PTSD, to have the accommodations they needed to live and work in the community. And it's constantly being stretched as... because as I find, and I've been doing this work for 18 years, that it's changing as new issues keep cropping up, and it's been accommodating to enable a lot of other people to live and work in the community.
Mm-hmm. And can you give me sort of a concrete example? You were an attorney before you lost your sight.
Right.
Or did you go to law school when you were losing your sight?
I was always legally blind. I could never see well enough to drive, but I could see well enough to do my own reading. And I grew up in New York City, where driving is more of a handicap. But when I lost my sight, when I moved to Ohio, I had to take the Ohio bar exam because I didn't have enough years of working to get reciprocity. And when I first moved to Ohio, I was told that the way I could take the bar exam was to have somebody read it to me and I could dictate my answers. But as technology and everything evolved, when I finally did take the bar exam, the bar examiners rented a talking computer so that I could, and I use a talking computer so that I could read and write like I normally did to take the exam.
And was that a function of the ADA?
Yes. That was a function of the ADA. As a matter of fact, that was how I met my present employers, because they negotiated with the Board of Bar Examiners to rent this talking computer for me.
You're listening to All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News. We're talking about the ADA and the 25 years since it was signed into law by President H.W. Bush. If you have a question or comment, want to tell us about where you were when the ADA was signed into law and how it's maybe changed your life, give us a call, 614-292-8513, or email us at allsides@wosu.org. Fred Gittes, what's your assessment of the last 25 years, how it's unrolled? Any surprises? Pretty predictable?
In my life experience, there are always surprises and things never work exactly the way they're planned, and the ADA is a good example of it. First of all, because of my background and my focus on representing people who are having problems with the enforcement and obtaining of the ADA and obtaining equal opportunity, that is my experience, because I'm not an individual with disabilities, and so I've experienced it through others and trying to help other people. There is no question, just from my own personal life observations and from working with people, the ADA has made a huge difference. But much of that difference has only happened because people like Barbara, individuals with disabilities who've organized and created advocacy groups and who have engaged in a lot of litigation, made it happen.
Right.
And
there's no enforcement.
But, you know,
let
me just say this. Yes, it's the 25th anniversary in some ways, but to me, we're really only at probably the 8th anniversary of the ADA.
How so?
Because the ADA, when it was adopted, was a huge, exciting development. But as the years passed, the first 9 years after that act, courts, I would say, virtually whittled it out of existence in many regards. They interpreted the definition of what it took to be a qualified disabled person as someone, catch 22. You had to be so limited that you wouldn't be qualified. And if you weren't so limited, then you're not counted as a qualified disabled person. Mm-hmm. It got so bad that, again, thanks to the community and a lot of organizing and a bipartisan effort, something that's hard to even imagine now when you think about these kinds of issues, the ADA was amended in 2008 to explicitly overturn a series of U.S. Supreme Court decisions that really made it, especially in a number of contexts, including employment, virtually unenforceable. I can tell you that 5, 6, 7 years after the act was passed, many lawyers stopped doing ADA employment cases because they seemed to be impossible to be successful on. Now, the amended version of the act has transformed, especially in the employment area, attitudes of the courts, results in the courts, not that there aren't problems. And I think, as Barbara alluded to, each year, there, especially with technology, there are new issues that need addressed by the courts and are unclear. But we, in the employment area especially, it was transformative in 2008. And I think Derek mentioned with you on the phone. I mean, we had the Rehab Act from the 70s. But you didn't see all of the changes you're seeing in access now.
Now, from what I understand, in 2008, the U.S. Supreme Court curtailed the law.
I'm sorry.
That the U.S. Supreme Court curtailed the law, including the definition of a disability.
There was a series of cases in 1999.
Okay.
Which severely
whittled it away.
Even, you know, to give you an idea of what a struggle this is, and people and who don't experience it or work with it as mm-hmm. lawyers or have other interaction, what a struggle this is. Just think, 2004, there was a decision by the United States Supreme Court. It was called Lane versus Tennessee. The case was about two individuals with disabilities who needed to get up to the upper floors of a courthouse. They couldn't get upstairs because they didn't have elevators and they couldn't get access. Now, the court ruled, the issue there was whether that particular aspect of the Americans with Disability Act could allow a suit to enforce it against the state institution.
Right.
By a 5-4 vote. Just imagine this. It was a one vote margin. The court did allow that the courthouse could be, the state could be sued about no access to that facility. Now, that's 2004 that decision occurred. The events in that case happened more than a decade after the ADA was passed, yet even then, they couldn't get upstairs in a courthouse. This isn't remote in time. And I can tell you the curb cuts that Derek talked about, mm-hmm. the advances that are occurring, and they are dramatic. They change people's lives, their daily lives, in terms of accessing physicians and hospitals. Many of those are only happening because private individuals and private attorneys file lawsuits to get them enforced. And in the surveys I've seen there, and as Derek said, there is no ADA police.
Right.
Widespread noncompliance even now at institutions that you would just be shocked aren't doing basic things such as access issues, bathrooms, disability parking. I mean, it's not that it's all been solved.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm not even talking about the newer issues related to
technology
and website access and mm-hmm. in graduate schools, professors using websites or programs that are not accessible, making it harder for graduate students. But so my anniversary from as a lawyer, at least, is this is the 2008. It was 7 years.
7 years.
We've had real tools to enforce this.
Barbara Corner, agreed?
Mostly, I agree. In terms of the definition of disability in the employment cases, I do. I mean, in terms of some other things, I mean, for instance, for me, I ride the city bus all the time, and the ADA mandates that the bus stops be announced. And we went round and round with CODA about that in 2000 or 2001 because one of my friends who was blind, the driver didn't tell him when he got to his stop. He ended up walking 4 miles back to his stop. And that's where, you know, the ADA was very helpful and on our side then, and also technology because, you know, CODA now has automatic stop announcements. So that makes it wonderful to be able to ride the bus.
How do you, how does the movement, how do the advocates for the ADA keep tapping into the changing technologies? Are there people out there who just do that and that's what they're doing, is paying attention to what's possible and making sure that, organizations like CODA are implementing it?
I think there are a lot. Somewhat of a technology geek. I don't do everything, but I do look because a lot of the work that I've done also has helped people with other disabilities access vocational rehabilitation services to get what they need to go to work. I look for a technology solution if I think there's going to be one. And I have people on my team younger than myself who are a little bit more knowledgeable about technology who go out, you know, and find that. And there is a market for that. You know, there are individuals who do assistive tech, you know, that's all they do. They're assistive technology engineers. And, you know, they look for solutions. I mean, it is amazing what smartphones can do and what iPads can do. We had a client who was along the her disability was on the autism spectrum. She was nonverbal until she got an iPad, and then she could communicate. I mean, so there's amazing things out there with technology. you know, which can help people, you know, in a lot of ways. I mean, now there's
that were conceived of 25 years ago.
Right, right. I mean, who would know that you could take an iPhone and do face recognition, and if you're blind, know who was at a party? So,
Jeannie in Reynoldsburg, you're on the air. Hi, Jeannie.
Thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
I have had rheumatoid arthritis since the age of 3, and throughout my life, I have gone through different stages of disability. Currently, I'm walking with crutches. I was walking with crutches before and after the Disability Act, and the greatest impact that I saw, because independence is very important to me, and being able to drive allows me to have that independence. I used to cruise the gas stations, sizing up the height of the curb to see whether I would be able to get up to pay for my gas. And biggest difference to me was actually when they started cutting the curbs. They gave me a ramp, and therefore I was no longer limited as to where I can go to get the gas.
Boy, once again, it's one of those things, Fred, that we just take for granted. Was there litigation for that?
Absolutely. In fact, here in Columbus, in a community surrounding Columbus, there was litigation. My firm did some. Other groups did it. And, you know, it is wonderful what the ADA can do if people just do it. Unfortunately, a lot of places, as Derek mentioned, you know, it's a spectrum of reactions, and unfortunately, there are a lot of institutions and individuals who just slide as long as they can, and then unfortunately, it takes action to get them into compliance.
One of the messages, and Jeannie, thank you so much for that call. We appreciate it. Is that when you make the world accessible to people with disabilities, whatever the stripe of disability it might be, you make it accessible for all. Anyone could end up disabled at some point. There's no and that idea of the curbs, getting rid of the curbs at the gas pumps, is something that there was no reason for them to be there.
Right. You know, I just got through reading an article about predicting demographics and how it relates to individuals with disability. And clearly there is an association with the need for accommodations and adjustments as you get older. You know, mm-hmm. mobility declines, a lot of things are affected. So, in fact, they were doing some analysis of, you know, how do we deal with that and address it. So, yes, I've heard a lot of people who are not individuals with disabilities appreciate curb cuts.
Yeah,
people
right.
with strollers, mothers yeah. with strollers and shopping carts.
Yeah.
And, you know, as far as the older population goes, I mean, one of the most difficult decisions that older people have to make is to give up driving, because the options, if you don't drive in Columbus, are not that terrific, depending on where you live.
Mm-hmm.
So there are people out there who probably shouldn't be driving, but are, because it's too frightening to mm-hmm. face the alternative.
The measure was called a disaster for small businesses 25 years ago. What protections were put in the ADA to protect those interests, Fred Geddes?
Well, the ADA had a two-tier set of standards when it comes to access issues for pre-existing facilities, business services. If the technical requirements or the fix, they had to be readily feasible, was the language in the act. And so your small, certainly your mom and pop businesses that were in buildings or offices that were quite old and it would be expensive to repair, there was an escape clause. And it's been widely used. Now, just as technology is changing things, building materials, building construction techniques are getting better and better. And my understanding, and I don't claim to be a technical person, but the cost efficiencies and the cost of fixing a lot of things is getting better. So hopefully more and more, even existing facilities that haven't been renovated or had substantial changes, which triggers a different standard. But the courts are dealing with all these changes. We're, you know, I'm just sitting here listening to Barbara and technology, and it is, I think it was Paul Grossman who said to me or emailed me recently, it's a two-edged sword. It is a solver of problems, but also it creates problems because we all rely on the internet and access. And I know there's been a series of court decisions around the country which go both ways about whether services that are internet-based, which aren't tied to a physical business that, you know, as they call it, brick-and-mortar locations, there are courts that are saying they're not covered by the ADA. And that's a hot debate right now. And, you know, there are cases out there where employers make decisions to use, for example, security programs or other website programs or other technology that are not adaptable to some of the aids that are available for people who have no vision or limited vision. And so by making choices to use those kinds of programs, it creates problems. And if the courts don't come around to seeing that, what I believe is that the services language in the ADA, that it doesn't just cover physical access. There's language that certainly, I believe, covers services as well. If the courts don't come around to agreeing that internet shopping, that other internet-based programs don't have any obligations under the ADA, then we're going to probably need another fix.
Right.
And those companies are going to lose business because I love to shop and I shop on the internet and I determine where I shop by what's the easiest thing for me to use. And people with disabilities are consumers. We have money and we spend it. So businesses would be losing. And if you build in accessibility from the get-go, it's a lot easier and cheaper than if you have to retrofit things. So...
Right. When we were talking with earlier with Derek Mortland, we were talking more bricks and mortar. We were talking about curb cuts and that kind of a thing. But the accessibility to the internet is a whole other realm then. It's a lot of opportunity, but it's also another realm of discrimination.
It is. It is because we have, you know, there are lawsuits that, you know, are, you know, have been brought against, you know, various airline companies and stores where their websites weren't accessible. And a lot of our life, modern life, is done, you know, via the internet. And it is extremely frustrating when, you know, for instance, I have, you know, some people who are blind and moved and were trying to change their voter registration and that form wasn't accessible for them. And that's extremely frustrating when you get down to it. Or when I tried to send, you know, an email to a state agency and there was one of those CAPTCHAs and the audio CAPTCHA didn't work and I couldn't do it. And that is, you know, it's really, really frustrating because you know you're capable of doing something, but you can't do it because you can't see.
Right. We're talking about the ADA and the 25 years since it was signed into law by President George H.W. Bush. If you want to give us a call and tell us how the ADA has changed your life, maybe what the challenges are ahead, give us a call, 614-292-8513, or email us at allsides@wosu.org. You can also check out our Facebook page and post a question or a comment there. We'll continue our conversation. This is All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News. Welcome back to All Sides. I'm your host, Ann Fisher. Sunday will mark 25 years since the Americans with Disabilities Act was signed into law. The ADA extended the rights of millions by banning discrimination in public places and in workplaces. It was intended to give people access to jobs and to places. Detractors warned of huge costs and exhausting litigation. We've been talking about that. Still with us is Columbus-based disability and civil rights lawyer Fred Gittes, and also Disability Rights Ohio senior attorney Barbara Corner. If you have a question or comment, give us a call, 614-292-8513, or email us at allsides@wosu.org. Now, there is an effort afoot to limit federal government control of the ADA and push it back down to the states. Barbara Corner, what are your thoughts about that? Would you rather have states in control of it, or is it at the national level?
I'd rather have it at the national level because it would make it a lot uniform, and I think it'd be in the long run a lot cheaper, because that way you won't have 50 different states doing 50 different things. And it is, I think it's something that the federal government should control because it's a civil right. The same thing as the federal government has a say in non-discrimination because of gender or race. It's the same thing.
Fred Gittes?
I agree.
Yeah. Marcia in Columbus, you're on the air. Hi, Marcia.
Thank you for this program, and I appreciate the comments recently by your guest regarding the internet. A friend of mine is blind and has told me his perils of trying to navigate. My question is, how are radio programs made accessible for deaf people? And I'll take my comments off the air. Thank you.
Okay. Thanks, Marcia. Barbara Corner?
Well, the only way that a radio program could be made accessible would be to have some kind of real-time captioning and a transcript. And I am not sure that that has ever been litigated, and I'm not sure, considering that radio is an audio format, whether or not that would be required, because it might be a fundamental alteration.
Fred Gittes?
Yeah, I think Barbara's...
Okay, so there's not necessarily
no clear answer.
Obviously, yeah, they could be transcriptions. There could be lots of different things, and sometimes there are. But is it required? And that's unclear at this point. It hasn't been litigated. So 614-292-8513 if you have another question or comment. Enid in Columbus, you're on the air. Hi, Enid.
Oh, hello. I have a friend with a mobility disability. He lives in another country, but nevertheless, I have always wondered why, when laws are put into place, they are not tested by people in a wheelchair or with that disability. Because if they were, there would perhaps be fewer problems.
Hmm. Well, it's a good thought.
I can tell you lots of stories, but, mm-hmm. you don't have time.
Well, what about that, Fred Gittes? Has it ever been litigated about how they determine curb cuts, for instance?
Yes, and it is individuals' mobility problems who I give most of the credit to for the advances under the ADA. They didn't just happen. I want to be fair about this. There are a lot of institutions and businesses that were proactive, but there were a lot more that were not. And there's a debate that has bubbled up in the last few years of complaints from the business community about lawsuits, about access issues. And it is thanks to individuals with disabilities who do test and do go out and do find an attorney. And by the way, there are not a lot of attorneys who do this kind of access work. Because, and I don't want to spend time on this program, but there are issues about the ability of, they're called private attorney generals that are basically enforcing the law of the land just like a prosecutor does. There are difficulties in them getting compensated because of very technical decisions about attorney's fees. But I want to say right now, and I thank that caller very much, I want to encourage people who are living with any kind of disability, but especially mobility issues. Don't, I know from experience people are reluctant to do these cases. For many cases, they don't know how to do them. They don't have access to attorneys. There are groups out there. If you raise the issue, you can help solve the problem. Much of the progress has been only because people who couldn't get into a doctor's office or went to a hospital and had a problem or couldn't do grocery shopping at a location that they should have been able to do it. Mm-hmm. And these are institutions that had these problems for, 20, 25 years, and only because they took it upon themselves to get the law enforced. You mentioned the EEOC. We have the Ohio Civil Rights Commission here in Ohio. Charges can be filed in both those institutions. You don't have to have an attorney. Unfortunately, with budget cuts, both those agencies have seen severe limits on their staffing and other resources, which is why it is so important that if you're a student in graduate school, don't wait till you have a problem with testing locations or time limits. Be proactive. Mm. Raise accommodation issues. If you're having accessibility issues, call Barbara. That's their part of what they're there for. Call me. Call advocacy groups such as Derek works with.
Barbara Corner, what about how they test, say, construction areas, and how much input do disability rights groups have in how those are developed, the standards?
The standards were developed and they have changed over the years. Mm-hmm. And a lot of time, and disability advocacy groups have had a say in it because when the new standards were proposed, there was a time for commenting on those standards. And so people with disabilities had an opportunity to comment on the standards and changes. And like, for instance, for people who are blind, the curb cuts, as you may notice, have detectable warnings on it, so that someone who's blind like me, I could feel that from feeling the surface that I'm on a curb cut, and it lets me know that I'm near a street and that I could get ready to cross the street. So, and over the years when the ADA was first passed, there was a lot of talk about, because different companies and subway and transportation companies said that those detectable warnings, while they didn't really matter and they tried to delay them, and people with disabilities wrote letters and lobbied, and, so those detectable warnings are still in the law. So people with disabilities can make a tremendous difference, even if you just write a letter. I had an experience where a restaurant refused to let me in because of my guide dog. And I agreed I wouldn't go in that day, but I wrote them a letter. And when the owner of the company found out, she was horrified and gave me a $100 gift certificate to go back. So even by, talking to the manager or writing a letter, you never know what you're going to start. You're going to start something and you it may only be like a splash of a petal in water, but the ripples of it can have a lot more effects.
Scott in Columbus, you're on the air. Hi, Scott.
Hi. I'm here for a comment. I'm a general contractor, and there was a discussion about whether these ramps and other things have been tested by people with disabilities. Right. We are actually required to file and find code requirements that identify pitch and width and all kinds of things so that they do meet the requirements of people who are disabled. My other comment is I think some of the challenges you see out there and some of these old buildings is retrofitting these buildings so people can have access is extremely cost prohibitive, and that's probably why you're seeing some pushback from the business community. And I'll take your response off air.
Okay. Thank you, Scott. Fred Gittes?
It is true. In some, especially some of the older buildings, it is difficult. And I think that's a reality, and it was acknowledged in the law by the difference in standards. So you have to look, each case is different, each location is different. And I'm going to digress for one second because I think it's important. it's a different kind of issue that I think people need to think about, and more in the employment area. But and that is, we've been talking about mobility issues a lot. In the workplace, what I get more and more calls on and I read more and more cases about are people or individuals with disabilities associated with various kinds of diseases, whether it's cancer, irritable bowel diseases, MS cases. And I know a lot of people believe or want to believe that stereotypes about people with disabilities are diminished, or some people, I think, are naive enough to think they aren't there anymore. That's just not the case. And people who, oftentimes people with these kinds of problems are ridiculed at work. Employers make presumptions about how their conditions will progress. They will have attitudes about how they can't possibly perform functions. There have been some recent cases, especially in the fire services and in law enforcement, dealing with diabetes situations and other kinds of long-term health issues. And I just want to make sure people listening to this program, if you're in that category and you're having problems at work, it is covered by the ADA. There are accommodations that you may be entitled to that employers may be resistant to or maybe not. And it's really important to be people to be, it's actually called the interactive process in the law. It's very important if people have physical, medical limitations and they can do their job, but they need some adjustments, they need to bring it up. They need to be prepared to talk about it. A lot of people don't want to. A lot of people are fearful.
Well, you know, Barbara Korner, what about you? I mean, what do you know about that experience for people? That's tough to do. It's hard to ask for a raise, let alone ask for some accommodation or maybe not. I mean, a lot of people have negotiation skills problems. They don't know how to ask this. Are there people out there that help others learn how to ask for these things and tell people what they need?
I mean, you know, our office provides information on for people. We get a lot of calls about from people who are having some of those employment questions, and we can help and provide them with, you know, some advice about what their rights are and how to ask about it. But there are also different advocacy groups, you know, the American Diabetes Association or the Epilepsy Foundation, different groups, advocacy groups like that can also, you know, help people answering those questions. Or the organization that Derek works for can help people, you know, learn how to negotiate and ask those questions. You know, my experience has been, in a lot of ways, I'm lucky I'm blind. I tell you I'm blind, everybody knows what that is. And they can imagine what kind of limitations or accommodations I might need. Mm-hmm. But if you say I have irritable bowel syndrome, that's different. Mm-hmm. A lot of people don't understand or misunderstand.
Okay, well, we are out of time. 25 years of the Americans with Disabilities Act. It went into effect 25 years ago on Sunday. But there's been lots of changes. We've been talking about some of those this hour with Fred Gittes, disability and civil rights lawyer. Fred, thanks for joining us today.
Sure. Thanks again.
And also Barbara Korner, senior attorney for Disability Rights Ohio. Barbara, thanks to you.
I appreciate your having asked me.
And thanks to the AllSides staff. Producer Michael DeBonis, associate producer Amy Jurovich, assistant producer Shyla Knott, AllSides interns Shahina Sagiri, Ryan McFadden, Sam Buck, and Matt Berkeley, with video production by Rich Karsmitsky and Amber Karsmitsky. Thanks for listening. This is AllSides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News.